So first I'm going to talk about some preliminaries, metrics and light cons, which most people probably know, but it's good to be reminded of. Faster than light travel. I'm going to give some examples, the expanding universe, warp drives, and wormholes. Is faster than light travel possible? We'll see that all of these, well, these two violate what's called the energy conditions in general relativity, but that might not be a big problem. Then I'll show you that if you can travel faster than light, you can also travel back in time. So we'll talk about how you can create closed time-like curves and paradoxes of time travel and possible resolutions. Okay, so to remind everyone, space-time is described by a 3+1 dimensional manifold. And points are described by four vectors, x with components x mu, where mu goes from 0 to 3. 0 is usually the time component in some coordinate system. The curvature of space-time is described by a metric g, which is a function of x. It has components g, mu, nu. So it can be represented as a 4x4 symmetric matrix with this mu and nu going from 0 to 3. The metric defines the inner product of two vectors, v and u, and the norm of a vector. Well, here, so this generalizes the dot product, basically. And here I'm using the Einstein summation. So this quantity, of course, is a sum over mu and nu from 0 to 3. However, the metric on space-time is not positive definite. So this norm can, in fact, be 0 for a non-zero vector or even negative. So if the norm is positive, we say that the vector is space-like. If it's 0, we say that the vector is light-like or null. And if it's negative, we say that the vector is time-like. So the Flat-Minkowski space-time metric in Cartesian coordinates is very simple. It's just a constant matrix, diagonal, with the -1 in the time coordinate. So on a flat space-time, to give you some examples, this vector is going to be space-like. This vector is going to be light-like because its norm is going to be 0 because this one will become a -1 and cancel this one. And this one is going to be time-like because it's going to be a -1 contribution from here. So the norm is negative. Okay, now, let the x mu be the infinitesimal distance along the x mu direction. So I can define using the metric an infinitesimal line element, like so, which tells us the infinitesimal space-time interval between nearby points. So for flat space-time, I just calculate this thing over here with the metric I wrote in the previous slide, and I get this line element. And of course, the space-time interval can be time-like if it's negative, light-like if it's 0, or space-like if it's positive. Light-like intervals are given by taking the interval to be 0. So let's assume the light moves in space only in the z direction. So then it doesn't move in x and y, so these are going to be 0. Then I can divide by dt, and I get that dz dt is +/-1, which of course is +/- the speed of light, because the speed of light, as everyone knows, is 1. So in general, in a flat space-time, the light-like directions are at a 45-degree angle, or slope of +/-1, in any plane parallel to the t-axis. So, given an observer at some space-time point, x0 over here, its light cone is defined as the collection of light-like directions satisfying d squared equals 0 from that point. So here is the future light cone with slope +1 and the past light cone. Massive particles or objects follow time-like curves. As they pass through x0, they'll be inside the light cone. So here there's this spaceship over here, it passes and it stays inside the light cone. Space-like curves will be outside it. The observer is in causal contact only with points connected to it by time-like or light-like curves, collectively known as causal curves, and cannot have any causal contact, whether by travel using a spaceship or communication using, let's say, light rays, with points connected to it by space-like curves. Or can't it? So let's see how this might be possible. So for an expanding universe, we use the FLRW metric with this line element. Now, this is almost like the Minkowski metric I wrote before, except there's an additional factor A of t over here. So when we measure spatial distance for a particular constant time, it will be scaled by the scale factor A of t. By definition, at the present time, t0, we have A of t0 defined to be 1. So a galaxy that is currently a distance d0 from us, at a later time t, will be at a distance d of t equals A of t times the current distance. Okay, so now we can calculate the recession velocity of the galaxy. So if d equals a times d0, I can take the derivative of both sides. Then since d0 is d over a, I can plug that into here. Then I define the Hubble parameter, which is a dot over a. And I get that d dot is h times d. So at the present time, t0, d dot is h0 times d, where h0 is the Hubble constant, the value of the Hubble parameter at the present time, which is roughly 70 kilometers per second per megaparsec. And this is Hubble's law. The recession velocity of a galaxy from us is proportional to its distance from us. Right? So this is the recession velocity, this is a distance, this is a proportionality constant. What does that mean? It means that the galaxy, which is 1 megaparsec away from us, has a recession velocity of about 70 kilometers per second. A galaxy farther away than approximately 4.5 gigaparsecs, or 14 billion light years, is receding faster than light, since the recession velocity d dot is going to be larger than 1. Importantly, the recession velocity d dot is only an effective velocity due to space itself expanding. The galaxy's local or peculiar velocity in space relative to nearby galaxies is independent from d dot and always lower than light, since it locally follows a time-like path. Nonetheless, it seems that we've found a loophole in the universal speed limit. While the local velocity of an object within space cannot exceed the speed of light, the global or effective velocity due to the expansion of space itself is unlimited. So now we'll see how this loophole is exploited by the warp drive. So the Alcubierre warp drive is described by the following metric. So, again, it's very close to Minkowski, except here in the 0,0 component, I have an additional v squared f squared term. I'm going to explain v and f soon. And here there's also vf term on the off diagonal. The line element is this. And v, as a function of t, is the velocity of a warp bubble, as calculated in flat space-time, which is moving along the z-axis, following the path written here, where zeta is the position of the bubble, so that the velocity, which is simply d zeta dt, is larger than 1. Now, here, there's an R of t. This is simply the distance from the center of the bubble located at zeta. And the form function that appears here is a function of this distance from the center of the bubble. And it's defined such that f of zero, meaning at the bubble itself, is equal to one, and f vanishes outside of the bubble. So that means space-time is flat everywhere outside the bubble, because then f equals zero, and then this additional term vanishes, and I'm just left with the normal Minkowski metric. And the metric reduces to Minkowski if I take the velocity to be zero, because again, then this term would vanish. So here's a nice picture. And you can see that space-time expands behind the warp bubble, which contains a spaceship in this case, and contracts in front of the warp bubble. So a spaceship inside the bubble is at rest. The velocity v of t is due to the expansion of space-time itself, and it can be arbitrarily large. So I can also find how the light cones look like. So on the tz plane, again, I have that dx and dy are zero, and I want to find light lag direction, so I take ds squared to be zero, and then I get this. From this, I find that dz dt is plus or minus one, which is what we had in the flat space-time, plus v times f. So what does that mean? So when f is zero outside the bubble, I just have the normal 45 degree angle light cones because it's a flat space-time. But inside the bubble, in the shaded region over here, the cones get tipped over. And the more that we get to the center of the bubble, which is this black line, the more they get tipped over. The spaceship, following this black line, is always locally moving along a time-like path inside its own light cone, not a space-like path, even though globally its speed, v of t, is faster than light. Right, so you can clearly see here that if I follow this path, I'm always inside the light cone. So everything is fine. Another way to travel faster than light is using wormhole. So first, you should know that the metric for a flat Minkowski space-time in spherical coordinates is written like this. Now, this metric is actually flat, even though it has non-constant coefficients. So this term over here is actually the flat metric on a sphere of radius r. A simple type of wormhole is the Ellis wormhole that has this metric. So it's almost like Minkowski, except here I have this b squared. Now, this b is some positive constant, and the coordinate r, in this case, actually goes from minus infinity to plus infinity, and not from zero to infinity, as usual. So that means that I have a sphere this with the radius of square root of b squared plus r squared. For r much larger than b in absolute value, the metric reduces to the flat metric, and the sphere has radius r, right? Because then this b is negligible, like, and just vanishes. For r equals zero, the sphere has radius b. So what does that mean? It means that this metric describes a wormhole with a spherical throat of radius b connecting two asymptotically flat regions of space, one at r equals minus infinity and another at r equals plus infinity. So here's a nice photo. The two connected regions, so here, let's say, is r equals minus infinity, and then I go through the wormhole. Here is the throat of radius b, and here is r equals plus infinity. The two connected regions may be two very distant regions of the same universe, such as two galaxies. The wormhole provides a shortcut through space, since a spaceship only has to travel through the length of the wormhole. Right, so instead of taking this whole trip around here, which can be billions of light years, I just pass through this wormhole, which can be as short as I want. The spaceship will reach the destination long before a photon that is not traveling through the wormhole will reach the destination. So it effectively travels arbitrarily faster than light. Of course, its local velocity inside the wormhole itself is always slower than light. So in summary, we've seen that the expanding universe, which of course is well supported by observations, allows faster than light velocities. Warp drives utilize a similar mechanism, moving the warp bubble faster than light by expanding the space behind it. Wormholes also allow faster than light travel simply by changing the topology of space to create shorter paths between distant places. The question now is, are warp drives and wormholes realistic? So to discuss that, we have to learn a bit about general relativity and energy conditions. So far, we've simply written down space-time metrics without actually invoking relativity. In GR, the metric is a solution of Einstein's equation. Well, of course, I'm taking Newton's constant to be one. So the equation here on the left-hand side, I have G mu nu, a capital G, is the Einstein tensor, which is some complicated function of the metric G. And on the right-hand side, T mu nu is the stress energy tensor, which is a function of the matter fields phi. Now, if I have some action S of phi for the matter fields, then I can define T mu nu as the variational derivative of this action, where here this G is the determinant of the matter. A simple example is the stress energy tensor of a perfect fluid, which is a diagonal 4x4 matrix, where here in the 0,0 component I have rho, the energy density, and here I have the pressure P. The Einstein equation simply tells us how the matter content, as described by the stress energy tensor, affects the curvature of space-time. However, it does not put any restrictions on the form of T mu nu itself. The energy conditions are assumptions meant to distinguish which forms of the stress energy tensor are physically reasonable. In particular, they attempt to implement the restrictions that the energy density should not be negative and that gravity should always attract. So here are some examples. The strong energy condition says that gravity is always attractive. So for any time-like vector u, T mu nu has to satisfy this inequality, where here T is a trace of T mu nu. This may be derived, roughly speaking, by demanding that free-falling observers get closer to each other under the influence of gravity. The weak energy condition says that the energy density measured by an observer cannot be negative. And this is simply given by this inequality. So for any time-like vector u, this inequality has to be satisfied. The null energy condition says that these two are satisfied for a null vector u. So of course, this is the same as the weak, but with null u. And here, since u is null, then g mu nu, u mu, u nu is actually zero. So again, this reduces to this form. Also have the dominant energy condition, which says that the energy density is not negative and the energy flux is not space-like. So this is the energy flux for any time-like vector. For a stress energy tensor of this nice diagonal form, which corresponds, for example, to perfect fluids, as we saw before, and to massive scalar fields. The strong energy condition implies that the energy density plus each of the pressures has to be non-negative, and also that the sum of all the diagonal components has to be non-negative. The weak energy condition implies this, plus that the energy density itself has to be non-negative. The null energy condition implies just this. And the dominant energy condition implies that the pressures have to be smaller in absolute value than the energy. And again, that the energy density has to be non-negative. So this seems reasonable. Usually in GR, we first write down T mu nu for a particular distribution of matter, and then solve Einstein's equation to find metrics corresponding to that matter distribution. For example, for a vacuum with no dark energy, we have the T mu nu equals zero. Two of the possible solutions for the metric in that case are Minkowski spacetime and the Schwarzschild black hole. Alternatively, we may start by assuming a particular metric on the left-hand side of Einstein's equation, and then solving for the stress energy tensor on the right-hand side. So if we do this for the warp drive, we find that this quantity is equal to this. Here, v is the velocity, and f is the form function. So since f is non-zero inside the bubble, I find that inside the bubble, this quantity is in fact negative. So this clearly violates the weak energy condition, which says that this quantity should be non-negative at the bubble itself. And one can also show that the null energy condition is also violated. Therefore, a warp drive requires matter with negative energy density. This is known as exotic matter. For a traversable wormhole, one can again show that all of the energy conditions are violated at the throat. In fact, a wormhole with a throat of 1 meter would require roughly 1 Jupiter mass of exotic matter. So the warp drive and wormhole clearly violate the energy conditions. However, this does not necessarily mean that they are unrealistic. In fact, the energy conditions are known to be violated in many other scenarios. For example, classical scalar field phi may be coupled to gravity using this action, where here R is called the Ricci scalar, is a function of the metric, V is the potential of the field, and Xi is a coupling constant. If Xi equals zero, this term vanishes, and the field is called minimally coupled to gravity. Now, if the potential is positive, which is usually the case, then the strong energy condition is violated. If, in addition, this Xi is not equal to zero, so the field is non-minimally coupled to gravity, then you can show that the null energy condition is also violated. Yeah?
Does it mean that like for these parameter ranges, there are solutions for this action which violate? Or is like every solution violates the energy condition?
You can calculate the T mu nu and see that it's violated.
Or any phi?
I guess so. Now, another example is that if you place two parallel uncharged metal plates very close together, then due to quantum effects, a force known as the Casimir force will pull the plates together. It can be shown that this is equivalent to a negative energy density between the plates, and therefore this effect, the Casimir effect, violates all of the energy conditions. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You mean that the strong energy condition is usually violated?
Well, it is strong, so maybe it's too strong.
So why do we have it?
It's a good question. is there's just different conditions, and not all of them apply in all situations. That's part of the problem. Yes.
Probably help to mention that what you're referring to are the local energy conditions.
Okay.
Because there are other ones that are global, which even quantum fields do.
Yeah, but I don't want to go into a lot of details because I don't really have the time. So it's currently unknown whether the violation of the energy conditions means that photon light travel is impossible. For example, quantum effects such as the Casimir effect may be used to generate negative energy density, albeit in extremely small quantities. In other words, nothing in known physics absolutely forbids building a warp drive or a wormhole with sufficiently advanced technology. Next, we'll assume that photon light travel is possible and see how it can lead to time travel. So, let's say I have an inertial frame with two space stations, A and B, that are at rest in this frame, with A at x equals 0 and B at x equals d, which is some positive constant. Using a warp drive with velocity v equals 4, for example, or a wormhole, I leave from space station A at time t equals 0, and I arrive at space station B at the time t equals capital T, such that t equals d over 4, simply because the velocity is 4. Now I change to a primed inertial frame. Primed mean that I have t prime and x prime, traveling in the x direction at velocity, for example, 1/2 the speed of light, using a Lorentz transformation. The point of departure stays at the origin, t prime equals x prime equals 0. And the point of arrival is now t prime and d prime, given by this Lorentz transformation with the usual Lorentz factor gamma. Now, since t, the time of arrival, is d over 4, the new travel time satisfies that t prime, well, plug in t equals d over 4 in here, and you see that t prime is in fact negative. Now, I'm going to leave from station B at t prime d prime, and travel with some velocity that's faster than light back to space station A. So let's say it takes me delta t prime time to get there, and the distance is delta d prime. So I'm going to arrive at this point in space time, such that the travel time is equal to the distance divided by the velocity. OK, so now we can choose the velocity to be sufficiently large, such that the time of arrival at A is in fact negative. So t prime is already negative, and v can be as large as I want it to. So then this can be arbitrarily small. Therefore, I can guarantee that this expression is negative. Since the original time of departure from space station A was at t prime equals 0, we have arrived back at A before we originally left. So this process created a closed time-like curve. Even though we only traveled along locally time-like curves from A to B and back to A, we somehow ended up in the causal past of our original space-time point. Okay, so we've seen that time travel should be possible if faster-than-light travel is possible. However, time travel would create several paradoxes. So the first type of paradoxes is known as consistency paradoxes. They occur when changing the past removes the conditions which required or allowed changing the past in the first place. So for example, as you can see, I broke my wrist, which led me to invent a time machine so I could go back in time and warn myself before it happened. If I successfully warn myself, then I never break my wrist, in which case I would have no reason to invent a time machine in the first place. So this is a logical inconsistency. Another type of paradox is our bootstrap paradoxes, which occur when an effect is its own cause. For example, since my wrist is broken, I was not able to prepare this talk. Luckily, a future version of myself appeared yesterday and gave me the finished talk. So I was able to give a talk today after all, and as soon as I invent a time machine, I will make sure to go back in time and give myself the talk in order to prevent a consistency paradox. However, who actually wrote the talk? It seems that the information was created from nothing. So there's several possible solutions for these paradoxes. The first one is the radical rewrite conjecture. It says that the concept of causality should be abandoned, and physics needs to be rewritten to allow time travel and more than one possible history or timeline. So classically, one of the options that might allow this is by using known Hausdorff manifolds to describe space-time. So a topology is Hausdorff if and only if for any two points, x1 and x2, which are not the same point, there exist open neighborhoods, O1 including x1 and O2 including x2, such that these neighborhoods do not intersect. If this requirement is relaxed, the manifold can branch or split into two or more possible futures at a particular point. Alternatively, one might employ the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. Another possible solution is Novikov's consistency conjecture, which simply says there's only one history for the universe and it must be consistent no matter what. Any attempt by a time traveler to change history will automatically fail simply because it has already failed. However, it seems unlikely to prove this conjecture using any known physics. And we also have Hawking's chronology protection conjecture. It says that the laws of physics will always conspire to prevent the formation of time machines. Attempts to prove this framework use the this conjecture is the framework of quantum field theory in curved space-time. So it seems that the vacuum expectation value of the stress-energy tensor might diverge in an incurable way in the presence of time machines, but there's no conclusive proof. In fact, precise calculations would require a full theory of quantum gravity, which we do not have yet. So finally, I just want to recommend two very good books. First one is by Matt Wiesel, Lorentz and Wormholes. This one is pretty old, from 1996, but it's really good. Another one, edited by Francisco Lobo, is Wormholes, Warp Drives and Energy Conditions, which came out last year and has all the latest research in this field. So thank you.
What about black holes?
What about them?
There are black holes that contain time-like closed curves.
Yeah, but you don't want to go into a black hole because you're not going to go out. The problem is that a traversable wormhole has to be free of singularities and horizons, both of which do exist inside black holes. So these solutions let you pass safely through the wormhole and emerge on the other side.
Okay, but I don't see what's the problem with going inside a Kerr black hole, for example, and the singularity is avoidable, so I wouldn't...
I mean, you're welcome to go inside it, but how are you going to come back out?
Okay.
I mean, it's not a feasible time machine. It just happens to contain closed time-like curves, but it's not cannot be used to actually travel back in time and get out and warn myself to not break my wrist.
What inside? I mean, you could try. Okay, I'm going to live inside this.
Yeah, me too.
And I want to preventing yourself from breaking your wrist in there. Could that is a in that sense is.
I mean, if I happened to live inside the Kerr black hole.
Yeah.
I guess, but again, it's not really. I mean, I'm talking about realistic scenarios where one could actually. Well. Okay, maybe realistic is not the right word, but I'm talking about scenarios that are discussed in the literature where one can actually, in a flat space time, travel faster than light, go back, and, you know, go back in time without needing to fall into a black hole at any point. So that would be the preferable way to do it. Any other questions?
All right. Questions? Let's thank the speaker again.
Thanks.